You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello, everyone. A very warm welcome along to the latest edition of the William Hill Golf Podcast. Good to have your company here on this Tuesday afternoon. Dave Kellner joined on Skype this week by Dave Tindall. Dave, first of all, a warm welcome to you, sir.
Hello, Dave. Yes, I'm not still in France, I'll just point out.
No, you're back home, aren't you now?
Yeah. There was no need for Skype, really. I just couldn't be bothered to come in and see you.
I don't blame you on that call, Dave. Let's talk about what happened last week, first of all. An eventful 3 days in Paris, ended up with Team Europe winning the Ryder Cup by 17.5 to 10.5. They've now won the last six Ryder Cups on home soil, the Europeans, and it was a demolition job, Dave. Despite the US winning the Friday morning four balls 3-1, it was all one-way traffic thereafter.
Yeah, I think both of us were on the same sort of general path, weren't we? I think in the months and weeks leading that, we initially thought America are going to win this, and then we started to turn, didn't we?
Yep.
Nearer the time, we just didn't quite turn far enough, maybe. I mean, I put up the bet of Europe to win by, I think, 1-3, thinking that's the most it could possibly be, but it just went even further, didn't it? So, and you can sort of see why now as you start to pick it apart.
Yeah, it was a masterstroke by Thomas Bjorn, first of all, selecting the four balls on that first morning. He kind of, it's been commented on in the press, he kind of baited Jim Furyk into sending out his big guns in the morning, which meant that if he then wanted to play all 12 players on day one, he had to play some out-of-form, wayward players in the afternoon in the foursomes, and that's what he did, and Europe swept the board that afternoon, and there was no looking back thereafter.
Yeah, well, I guess he didn't have to, did he? He could have been ultra-strong and said to Phil Mickelson, sorry, mate, you're playing terribly. You're not playing today. I think Bjorn was more cutthroat about things. I mean, it's easy to do the genius idiot thing with the captains, isn't it? But overall, I think Bjorn outplayed him from a captain's point of view. But ultimately, the players let Furyk down, I guess.
Did the Americans fail to prepare properly? We talked about this on last week's podcast. Only Justin Thomas played in the Open de France. He top scored for the US team. That might have happened anyway, Dave, but it could have been a benefit, him coming over and looking at the golf course.
Well, yeah, I mean, you tipped Thomas, so well done there with that one. I was on a similar point of view. I said I almost won it to happen as a sort of morality tale about you prepare and look what happens.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think if you're a future American captain, you just say, how can we possibly close this gap? An absolutely obvious one is to come and play the damn course beforehand when you've got the chance. So it's just, it's not good enough, is it, really, just having one player coming over? If you're trying to turn around this history, because it keeps happening, so they've got to come up with better ways of doing it.
Yeah, and I mean, there have been hundreds of articles written in the aftermath of the Ryder Cup, some brilliant pieces on team unity, which is always a big one in the Ryder Cup, and the knives have been out, haven't they, on the US side of things since they lost the Ryder Cup. Rumours of a bust-up between Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka, and Patrick Reed has been offering his opinion on what went wrong as well, Dave. A divisive character, Patrick Reed. I think the sport is better for him in it, being the pantomime villain to a certain extent, but he had the audacity to suggest that Tiger Woods had apologised to him after letting that four-ball partnership down. He said that Woods came up and apologised for his poor play. Patrick Reed, I think that might have been the worst ever performance in a Ryder Cup in terms of the partnership. So he might have shot 85 on Saturday.
Yeah, I think it's a bit of a tricky one, this one, because the kind of perceived knowledge, isn't it, that Europe always has a better unity. I think both teams have unity, but I think the Americans is a more fragile one, and it can fall to pieces quicker.
Yeah.
So when they're on top, they're loving it. I mean, you can't say they lacked unity when they spanked us last time. They're good at it, aren't they, when it's all going their way? It's when they're up against it. I think that's where the holes start to appear. So this is why they can't seem to win away from home, because you need to be tougher mentally, don't you? They can ride all the go USA at home, but they just can't dig in on the road. So I think, I don't know, it's something they've got to address.
I think the final word on this has to be about Mollywood, Dave.
Yes.
The undoubted success story of the week, Francesco Molinari becoming the first European to win all five matches since 1979. The Fleetwood-Molinari pairing went 4-for-4 in their matches, and they were the only team as well to see off Justin Thomas and Jordan Spieth, who were a shining beacon in the doom and gloom of Team USA.
Yes, that's right. They were fantastic, weren't they? And you know, you can sort of look back at it and think, well, both had got great records at the course. Fleetwood had won there before, Molinari runner-up several times. I wasn't quite as aware that they were absolutely that close.
No,
beforehand.
I wasn't either.
Did you know?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't aware they were as close. I mean,
yeah,
they're best friends, aren't they?
Yeah, and was it Fleetwood's wife used to be Molinari's manager? Worked for the management company.
Yeah.
So it was just, I mean, it was ridiculous. Even Fleetwood's baby turned one on the set. There was some link, wasn't there? Was 1 year old on the day that they won together. It was just...
Yeah, and Fleetwood's baby's called Frankie, isn't he?
As well, yeah. So yeah. It couldn't be more sort of united, could you? But yeah, that was a brilliant partnership. But again, just... And well done to Bjorn for putting them together. Just one other thing on partnerships, when we say things, I reckon 100% of the world would have said Bubba and Webb Simpson was an absolute disastrous foursomes partnership, and yet they won.
Yeah.
So for all the sort of, you know, you look terrible, don't you, if it loses, whatever happens, but that was just swept under the carpet.
Yeah.
Everyone was pretty, look at that terrible captaincy from Jim Furyk. Oh, they won. So it's often, you know, it does come down to the players, doesn't it, really?
Yeah, it does at the end of the day. But I think there was a misstep from Furyk. I know hindsight is 20-20,
yes,
isn't
overall,
it? But
yeah.
It was a misstep from Furyk putting out Mickelson and Reid in the afternoon foursomes on the first day, having thrown...
But putting out Mickelson at all was a misstep, wasn't it?
I think he knew as well, didn't he, Furyk, going into the Ryder Cup, that Mickelson was terribly out of form.
Yeah, so why not? I mean, Bjorn played Olesen once in the first 2 days, and that's his sort of great friend and countryman. So, you know, he was thinking team, wasn't he, really? Whereas Furyk was thinking, I better play Phil, I guess, because he's a bit of a legend. I think possibly the biggest mistake they made overall was the wild card picks in the end, because another thing they've got to do differently, you can't just pick the four best players and then go, right, where are we playing then? Oh, the Golf National, actually it doesn't suit any of them.
Yeah.
So they've got to be more canny, haven't they, about the course? I think the course is massive nowadays.
You've
got to pick your wild card picks around the course.
Yeah, I do think he was hamstrung to a certain extent, because he almost had to take Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, didn't he, really?
Did he have to take Mickelson?
Maybe not Mickelson, but obviously Woods had to go. Tony Finau, I thought, was pretty decent throughout the Ryder Cup. And I think another mistake that he made, he didn't play Webb Simpson enough.
That was definitely the case.
Webb Simpson was perfectly suited to the golf course and was coming into the Ryder Cup in decent nick as well. So I think he just made a few key strategic errors, but at the end of the day, they didn't play well enough to win.
Yeah, I mean, it is a thrashing, isn't it? If only we'd change one thing, there was quite a lot of areas they needed to do differently.
Let's get stuck into this week then. Enough of the Ryder Cup. The golf is back with the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship, the European Tour event this week. Brooks Koepka heading the betting at 9-1. Tommy Fleetwood is 12-1. Tony Finau and Tyrrell Hatton both 14s. Shane Lowry 16-1. Matthew Fitzpatrick is 20s. Eddie Pepperell 22s. Brandon Grace is 25s, along with Chris Wood and Louis Oosthuizen. It's 40-1 and bigger the remainder. This is an event, Dave, that was established at the turn of the century, and it's the only pro-am on the European Tour, and it's played over three superb links courses in Scotland, those being the Old Course at St Andrews, King's Barnes and Carnoustie, and the weather will really determine how low the scoring is, and it appears the wind will be a factor this year as well, Dave.
It looks that way. I think Thursday looks to be the worst day, and it's definitely full on bobble hats, isn't it, all week? I think there's no sort of glorious weather forecast that we've seen earlier this summer. I think it's genuinely going to be cold, so yeah, bobble hats, lots of jumpers on this week. I've got two picks. How about you?
I've got a couple of picks for this event as well.
Yeah,
how do you think the Ryder Cuppers are going to do here, because we've got four of them. Koepka and Finau have stayed over for Team USA, and Fleetwood and Hatton. Hatton obviously going for the hat-trick of wins in this event, having recorded winning totals of 23 under par and 24 under par the last 2 years. It's clearly a test that he relishes. How are those Ryder Cuppers going to do this week?
Well, obviously Fleetwood looked like he'd run out of gas on Sunday, because Finau hammered him, didn't he, in the singles, 6-4. It's a tricky one. You can, I mean, there are examples. Kime has won after Ryder Cup here. I mean, the ultimate after the Ryder Cup example I always use is Bernard Langer won the week after missing that putt at Kiewit Island in 1991.
Yeah.
So you can't just say, oh, they'll be tired, as a sort of like glib throwaway line. Any of those four could win, I think. Am I attracted by their prices? Not particularly.
No, I think if I was going to select one, it would be Tyrrell Hatton, I think, going for the three-timer. I know there's added pressure on, but I thought he formed a decent partnership with Paul Casey last week, played some good golf even in the match they were beaten in by Thomas and Spieth. He was really on his game, I thought, Tyrrell Hatton, before being beaten by Patrick Reed on the Sunday. I think this is a difficult betting event, Dave, because if the weather is poor, there can be a serious advantage or disadvantage depending on which course you're on that particular day. If you get Carnoustie on a bad day, it can be terminal to your hopes, whereas if you get King's Barnes or St Andrews when the weather's a little bit worse, you can manage to nudge it round there and still shoot a decent number.
Yeah, it's a very fair point. I mean, we once saw Brandon Grace shoot a 60, didn't we, in round one at King's Barnes?
Yep.
And that kind of propelled him to victory. So, yeah, I think the weather this year definitely needs to make you think about that. But one thing I've sort of found out attending Opens and tournaments, the weather forecast can be completely wrong one day to the next. So that does make it all a little bit trickier, to be honest.
13 of the last.
As we speak, I can't see any tea times yet. Can you?
No, I can't. I think there'll be I think they'll be announced later on this afternoon, I think, Dave.
Yeah.
13 of the last 17 winners have been from Great Britain and Ireland. Is that a pointer?
Yeah, I think that's a fair one. Not just because it's random, it's just because you think, well, they grew up playing this kind of chilly, windy golf. Mm. I think South Africans have always sort of done well. This Grace won it. Obviously, Oosthuizen has won the Open, was runner-up at the Open in 2015 when it was very, very windy. Ernie Els, another great links player. So South Africans can do really well. It looks like a week where maybe you wouldn't back somebody who loves playing in Spain on a hot day.
Yeah. I've got two picks. You've got two picks. Do you want to fire away,
yes,
Dave?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Erik van Rooyen.
Okay.
At 50-1, just talking about South Africans there, basically to justify this pick, to be honest. he's someone who, back in the summer, he put a picture of himself on Instagram saying he's absolutely loving it here in Ireland in the links. And he said, oh, really? I didn't quite know you'd be up for that. But he, you know, followed it through and looked to see if he was going to win there, the Irish Open. Led after 36 and 54 holes. Eventually finished fourth, but still an excellent week. And then in the Open up in Scotland, he again played great. He was sixth at halfway and finished tied 17th, but still a cracking effort really on his debut in any major. So he certainly marked our cards as someone who can play links golf. Even in the Scottish Open between those two, the record shows missed cut. He actually shot a second round 64. He just had a bit of a mare in round one. So yeah, this is a guy who can play links golf, and he's not really cooled down since. He was fifth at the Maiden in Denmark. He was 11th at the KLM Open last time, so kept his good form going. He has played in this tournament once, Dave, before, a couple of years ago, and again on the face of it, tied 59th, you think, well, whatever, but he was ranked nearly 600th in the world back then.
Yeah,
he was a guy coming over. He was a Sunshine Tour player just trying his luck in this event. He has moved on an awful lot. He's gone up nearly 500 places in the world rankings. I just thought 50-1 is around the price I wanted to play anybody, to be honest, in this week, because of the variables of the wind and everything. And he was one who jumped out as kind of someone who's got a links pedigree and who's in form as well.
Yeah, I like it. Eric Van Rooyen for Dave at 50-1. I'm with you as well. I've played a couple of big prices. I have got a player from the British Isles with my second pick, but I'm going to lead off with Ryan Fox as my...
He's my second pick.
Oh, is he? Is he indeed?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's 66-1, Ryan Fox, which I think you look at his... We're just going on links form here, aren't we, I think? In his two appearances at the Irish Open on links courses, he's finished fourth and second. And he's in his two appearances in the Scottish Open, he's finished fourth and sixth. So at 66-1, he looks like a knocking each way bet.
Yeah.
I suppose the negatives are pretty clear cut, aren't they? Given that he's failed to make the cut in his two appearances in this event, that doesn't unduly concern me, given he's logged pretty decent rounds at St Andrews in both appearances in this tournament. A New Zealander, so should be able to handle the wind all right. And a breakthrough on the European Tour looks close, and he's in decent enough form at the moment too.
Yeah, I think so. I agree with all that. I was slightly concerned. I followed him a bit after those two Irish and Scottish Open performances, and he didn't quite get it going. But 27th in the USPGA was good. Little bit disappointed in the European Masters and KLM Open, but I quite like the way he played the Portugal Masters, where tied 27th. Shot a third round 64. Just that to me, I think, is a good marker to get him back on some links where he can smash that drive. I mean, that's his great strength, isn't it?
Ernie Els
has always said he loves links courses because you can just keep pulling driver. And you look at Ryan Fox's driving distance stats. He's, you know, he's top about half the time he ever tees it up. So he can smash away and hopefully can play well in the wind. Yeah, and I think certainly at that price he's a good bet, isn't he?
Yeah, 66-1 seems more than fair, I think, on Ryan Fox this week. We are betting a 50 odds 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and 6 in the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship. Shall I fire away with my second pick then, Dave?
Yeah, you go.
Yeah, I'm going with Paul Dunn at 80-1 as my second selection. He led this event after the first round last year before eventually finishing in a tie for seventh. No disgrace in that performance, given that he more than likely ran out of steam having won his first event on the European Tour the week before in the British Masters. And in addition to that seventh, he's finished top 25 on both of his other starts in this event. I'm hoping for him that conditions won't be too tough, because his best form has come when scoring has been low. And don't forget, he famously announced himself into to the golfing world when leading the Open at St Andrews after 54 holes as an amateur back in the Open Championship in 2015. So he's got great memories. And even though he's been kind of out of form recently. He played okay in Portugal in his last event, and I think he will relish this test. So more than happy with that price on Paul Dunne.
Yeah, I've got a little extra on Paul Dunne this week.
Good. As long as it's positive, Dave.
Very positive, yeah. At the Ryder Cup last week, there's a handful of players who got invites from the European Tour to attend the Ryder Cup as guests.
Right.
Now, I don't know why this happened, but Matt Wallace actually turned it down.
Oh, right, okay.
Not sure why. Eddie Pepperell
didn't
go
because
he
felt snubbed. That could be the reason for Wallace, perhaps.
Possibly, who knows, but yeah, he didn't go. Eddie Pepperell felt ill. He was invited, but he would have gone. So that might warn you about Pepperell. But Campeão, Otegui, Gerigard and Paul Dunne all went, and they loved it.
Fantastic.
I just wonder if that little bit of 5% extra to your to your bit of inspiration.
It could well be. I think if you were failed to be inspired last week, Dave, you're probably in the wrong business, because it was an incredible week, Paris. You must have had a fantastic time there.
It would have helped if I wasn't half dying, but yes, it was a very enjoyable week indeed. And I think being there, the more you were there, you thought, God, this course doesn't have to suit Europe more than it does America.
Yeah, yeah.
Paul McGinley made a really good point that even the spectators were sort of set quite far back from the rough, because so many times you watch golf in America, it just bounces off somebody and goes back into play. So they were deliberately set further back, which you could afford to do because the viewing is so good at Le Golf National with the big mounds. You don't need to be that near to the fairway. I mean, that poor lady did get hit, to be fair, from Brooks Koepka. But in general, just keeping the crowd back just kind of made the missing area a lot bigger. So they did it really well, didn't they, Europe? They thought of everything.
That's a horrible story, that Koepka incident as well, because the lady involved has lost her sight in one eye. And Koepka was quoted as saying, it doesn't even matter if you shout four or not, because you're that far away, 300 yards plus, that it makes no difference, which is a pretty poor excuse for not doing so, I think. So I don't know. That story's not come to its conclusion yet, I wouldn't think. But maybe that's a negative for the chances of Brooks Koepka this week, perhaps. Might have a lot on his plate. Maybe. I'm not saying it's his fault at all.
No, to be honest, Dave, do you think he'll give it more than about 5 seconds thought?
Yeah, possibly not. Possibly not.
Just a guess.
Yeah.
You know.
Any others you want to mention before we move on?
I don't think so. I think obviously you've taken Fox there, which was my other one. There's some obvious names at the front end. Chris Wood, obviously, at 25-1.
Yeah.
Could go well.
Shane Lowry's a bit skinny, isn't he, as well? Yeah. He's been well found in the market.
Shane Lowry, be pleased. You've called him skinny there. Ross Fisher has finished runner-up last 2 years.
Yeah.
Shot 61, didn't he, at the old course last time? Harrington could be interesting.
Yeah, 50-1.
Having been a Ryder Cup vice captain and some really nice form, they won this twice. And the other one I looked at maybe was Tom Lewis, who won in Portugal and played really well on the Challenge Tour leading up to that. So he's banging form. He's got a third place here.
Yep, 50-1 as well for Tom Lewis. But a couple of picks apiece. One we've matched on with Ryan Fox. I've gone with Paul Dunne. And Dave's other pick, Erik van Rooyen, at 50-1. Let's move on swiftly to the Safeway Open, which kickstarts the 2018-2019 PGA Tour season. Patrick Cantlay is the 12-1 favourite for the event here with William Hill. Brant Snedeker is 20s. Emiliano Grillo is 22-1. Denny McCarthy is 25s, along with Joaquin Niemann. Phil Mickelson also 25s. Ryan Moore 25s, and it's 33-1 and bigger the rest. And the tour heads to California for the first event of this season, where those that have graduated from the web.com tour get to showcase their talents in a field without the majority of the tour's biggest names. Basically, for those that haven't been on tour before, Dave, it's a gentle introduction, this one.
Yeah, that's right. Some of those, that's an angle this week, is to look at players who are coming in hot, but you've just read some of the odds out there. Somebody like Denny McCarthy, who won the Web.com Tour Championship, what do you say, was 25?
Yeah, 25 to 1. It's skinny,
so
isn't
there's,
it?
There's no sort of secrets anymore, is there? So that wasn't too good. Yeah, I did look at some of the guys who've been playing well on the Web.com, even someone like Hunter Mahan, who's we sort of know him well.
Yeah,
from the main tour and even Ryder Cups. But I did eventually settle on Abet near the front end of the market. It's a difficult week, I think, generally.
A very, very difficult week on the PGA Tour, as far as I'm concerned. I've not got a bet in the event. Just a quick line on the golf course. This is the fifth year in succession that Silverado Resort in Napa Valley has hosted the event. It's a par 72 measuring just under 7,200 yards, which is relatively short by modern day PGA Tour standards. And as is the case with the Alfred Dunhill this week, here we have Brendan Steele going for the three-timer, having won the previous two editions. And the wind was something of a factor last year, and it may be this time around as well. I see this as a real ball striker's test, Silverado. And the greens, which are Poana, don't suit everyone either. They can be kind of bumpy, particularly in the afternoon, Dave.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's definitely a good angle to look at this week. There's quite a few players just really do struggle on them. I wondered if you would have actually put up a bet. I wondered if you were going to put up Sang Moon Bay.
Yeah, I did look at him. I've backed him in this event before.
Well, you backed him about 125, wasn't it?
Yeah, I did. 40 to 1 this time.
Is it because of the contrast you can't bring yourself?
Yeah, I think maybe that's it.
Because he's coming off a 6 and a win in the web.com.
He could go well, couldn't he? I just wonder whether he... Do you think he can win on the main tour? Do you think he's going to still be slightly undercooked?
Well, I don't know. It's there, and it's a possibility. It's an angle to just, if you're following in a web.com, why not follow a guy who's coming off that, who's actually won at the course?
Yeah, 40 to 1, Sang Moon Bay. I did look at him. I looked at Joaquin Neiman as well at 25 to 1. I think this golf course is absolutely tailor-made for him. His form has tailed off a little bit. He strung together four top tens in pretty quick succession on the main PGA Tour a couple of months ago. But that form, he's just run out of a little bit of steam. But I think he'll be ready to get going again here, Dave.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe just needs to freshen up again. So that he's someone who should go well.
Yeah, and Bo Hostler, another one that I thought would go well at 40 to 1.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. Of those, I sort of mentally start to pair those two with Abraham Ancer as well, kind of young guys coming through. But I think the move to the West Coast put me off Ancer a little bit. I see him more as a Bermuda kind of guy down in the South.
Yeah, I agree with you. You've got a pick, though, here.
Yeah, it's a fairly sort of tried and trusted road, and the price was just about enough to get me on board. Brant Snedeker at 20s.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, I mean, he's a multiple winner in California. He loves putting on Poana. In this event, he's not done anything outstanding, but he played all four rounds in 2014 and tied 17th in 2015. Was a decent effort, given that he started with a 73. But it's that kind of West Coast pedigree, plus the fact that we saw him shoot that 59 and win the Wyndham Championship back in August. And that had been sort of coming a little bit. I think he'd finished top 10 in Canada, third at Greenbrier. So over the summer, he played some nice golf. And I think he's someone who probably can't wait for the tour to get back to California. Even though he's not from there, he just seems to love that part of the swing. And it's a good chance. And I just think there's a lot this week who are, you can maybe strike a line through, and he's someone who I think will be really up for it, and the door's open really for a sort of classy player to come and win this.
Brant Snedeker, I tell you, the one that I really liked, but I was totally put off by the price, unfortunately. The Australian Cameron Davis, who was in the betting at 50 to 1. You talked about those players coming in hot. He had a couple of third place finishes in the web.com tour finals, the Australian, and he beat a good field in the Australian Open around about this time last year. That was in a field with the likes of Jordan Spieth, so that's good form. Had a win on the web.com tour as well in the Nashville Open back in May. And he's got a little bit of form on Poana Greens from the PGA Tour as well. So I just thought, if there was one of those youngsters that had graduated that were going to make a splash, Cameron Davis might be the one, and just 50 to 1 is a little shade on the short side.
Yeah, I mean, he's a classy player. He finished in the top 10 for greens in reg on the web.com last year, makes loads of birdies.
Do you think this is the perfect course for him or not? I get the feeling his comfort levels might rise where he can give it a real rip.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, that could be. This is quite sort of fiddly, isn't it, and twisty.
Yeah, he did play well in the Mayakoba on a similar type of golf course.
I suppose. that's maybe not a bad correlation. But are you sure you won't end up kicking yourself?
No, I'll leave it as an.
Can let it go
without an official bet at 50 to 1, just because it's a bit on the skinny side.
Put it out there.
Cameron Davis would be the one that I would go with if I was having a bet in the event.
Yeah.
Any others?
Well, his compatriot Curtis Luck, who we've sort of seen before, got to the top of the amateur rankings. He might go well. We've mentioned Denny McCarthy. There's Adam Schenk is another one who might go well. Again, coming off the web.com, played really well in that. And then you can go to the other end of the scale, some of the veterans. I always think Martin Laird plays well on the West Coast.
Definitely.
And I did look a bit at Russell Knox, but I'm not convinced. Well, his course form's disappointing, but I thought for a player of his class at 50s wasn't bad in this field, but not entirely convinced it's the right course for him.
It is an intriguing week, isn't it? But one that I don't think you need to get heavily involved in terms of the Safeway Open.
Yeah, I think these next few events in America, you can see a few patterns start to emerge. But as the first one back out, it's all a bit, we're guessing a bit.
Okay, let's wrap up here then, because I am aware we've gone over the half-hour mark here, Dave.
Good Lord.
We have just about. Dave, let's recap with your selections then.
Yeah, so in the Alfred Dunhill Links, I'm going to go a point each way, Eric Van Rooyen at 50s. And I'll just go half a point each way on Ryan Fox at 66, as you're on him as well.
Yeah.
And then I'll go a point and a half each way, Brant Snedeker at 20s on the PGA Tour.
I'm just going to take a point each way on both my picks in the Alfred Dunhill Links, Ryan Fox at 66 and Paul Dunn at 80 to 1 this week. Dave Tindall, thank you for your company.
Thanks, Dave.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned in and listened. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at D Kellner and at Dave Tindall Golf. And make sure you check out the betting for the two events this week, the Alfred Dunhill Links and the Safeway Open, on the William Hill website and on the app. And if you're having a bet, the very best of luck, and we'll speak again next week.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.